Solitaire Rose Novelcast, All In, Part 4. Know. Johnny Finch has been saving since high school for his first big-time poker tournament. A week after graduating college, he entered it and lost on the first hand. He has now returned back to the small town of Ravensport, Illinois, with his fiancée, Dawn, as they try to figure out what they're going to do with the rest of their lives. Johnny has until the end of summer to find a job, as the job he has on campus will end. And Dawn starting to ask questions about what they will do from here. Chapter 6. Let me see if I have this right, the plump elderly woman said, moving her glasses down her nose and glaring at him over them. You thought you'd just drop by for an interview to see if we could use you in our company. That's right, ma'am, Johnny said, feeling a little more uncomfortable every passing second in his only suit. He looked above her, unable to meet her gaze any more, and saw the name of the company in huge metal letters bolted into the wall. I just got out of college, and I'm sure that Tractor Co. could use my enthusiasm, knowledge, and drive. Young man, she said, as if talking to someone who rode the short bus to school, we have over 10,000 employees, all of whom came to us through an advertisement or a union representative. They went through a rigorous pre-employment process that included background checks, reference calls, and meetings with at least 3 levels of management. These managers are responsible for budgets that are calculated down to the point where they know how many paper clips they are able to use between now and next August. If they get authorization for a new position, it must be approved by upper levels of management that are so high I haven't even seen their offices, let alone know their names. If, and only if, they get approval to add that position, they look through over 300 resumes that we have on file. If none of those match their needs, they place an ad. If an ad does not get the employee they are looking for, they call employment agencies. If that doesn't work, they recruit from within. And if that doesn't work, they then decide that maybe the position is unnecessary. Never once in my 35 years have they looked at a resume and said, this kid's a genius. We have to hire them. But if they did, I'm sure it would not be the resume of someone whose only other job has been selling textbooks and delivering pizza on the side, she growled. She picked up his resume and went to the row of file cabinets against the wall, opened one of them up in the lower file drawer. She took his one-page resume and filed it away, barely looking at where she was putting it. That's a whole lot of ifs. Don't you scan or enter those resumes electronically, Johnny said. We only do that for the ones we might possibly be interested in, she said coldly. Here at Best Electronics, we have a strong management program that is perfect for the highly motivated individuals, the sweating, balding man said, as if he were reading it off a card. Johnny continued to make eye contact until he noticed the man's eyes were scanning right to left as if he were reading. He then looked down at the man's desk and saw that he was reading off a piece of paper, partially hidden under invoices and other paperwork. You would start at the bottom, working your way up quickly as you learn each part of our business, from selling CDs to helping customers learn what kind of computer will best fit their personal needs. I don't mean to interrupt, Johnny interrupted, but does my college degree help speed along the process of getting into management? The man got a look of horror in his eyes, then grabbed the half-hidden paper off his desk. Other papers went flying, and Johnny automatically started gathering up the ones that had fallen near him. I'm sorry, the man said, attempting to regain his composure. I haven't done a lot of interviews yet. I was just promoted a couple of weeks ago, and you're the first person who's asked about the management trainee program. Really? You have all these signs on the front window that you're hiring for it. Yes, but you're the first person who's come in and asked about it. Okay, the first person who didn't have that look that he'd just finished up drinking half the bar because he'd been laid off at Tractor Co. I shouldn't say this, but all of our jobs are considered management training. That way we can put people on salary and not have to pay them overtime. Johnny winced and thought that this might not be the best idea for a long-term career choice. He thought again about how upset Don was that he had no plan for his future other than playing poker, and pressed on. I understand. Does my degree in business administration and accounting make it so I can jump over being a floor worker and move faster into management? The man looked at the paper for a few more minutes and finally said, "It doesn't say." I'd called the regional manager, but he said if I call him again, he'll personally drive down here and cut off a part of my body that I'm hoping to use at some point in my life. But having to work here, and now having all these extra hours of paperwork, has really stressed me out. I'm sorry, I don't know. I just don't know. I understand, Johnny said, really starting to feel as if he were finding out way too much about this man. Maybe you could find out later. How much is a normal management trainee position pay? Minimum wage, the man said. He then brightened up and said, but you get 20% off anything in the store, and when things are on sale, you get first crack at them. I was able to get the first season of 24 on DVD last year for less than $20. Now that was a sweet day. I see, Johnny said, looking forlornly at the door to the office. Hold on, the man said, looking at his paper. Here it is. While I am sure that your time in college has served you well, we need our managers to have a fully rounded experience of working in our environments. Praise the applicant's work ethic for completing college and try to steer them away from this topic, as management trainee is a title used to make all employees feel special and that they have a career path. He looked a bit sheepish. I don't think I was supposed to read that last part, was I? I won't tell anyone, Johnny said, leaning in and speaking in a low whisper, letting the man know that they were sharing a secret. Good, the man said, relieved. If the regional manager knew I was letting employees know just how shitty we treat them, he'd be really pissed. And on that note, Johnny said, standing up, I think we're done here. We are? The man said. He looked down at his paper again and said, thank you very much for your time. Shake hand and let the applicant know you will call him in a couple of days to let him know. And with that, Johnny shook the man's hand and walked out of the office. Son, I'm the only person in this office, and I haven't needed a partner for the last 20 years. Why would I need one now? The man said. He was in a short-sleeved blue shirt, a rumpled-looking tie, and a full head of salt-and-pepper hair. He looked to be in his mid-50s, and had to do something to look as fit as he did. The office was a little one, inside an older building on the town square, and Johnny had seen Mark McLaren, accountant, on the window. I understand that, sir, Johnny said, his suit starting to feel like a wet, heated towel that made him feel even hotter than he had been in a long time. I'm not here for a job. I'm here to find out how you get started in the field. I spent a lot of time learning to do what you do, but they don't really teach you how to go out and do it for money. Yeah, damn colleges. That's why I was glad to find an apprenticeship. I learned it as I did it. It was better back then. Someone who'd been in the field for a long time would take you under their wing, show you all the ropes, help you learn what needed to be done. It was a great system. I owe a hell of a debt to the man who trained me in and then sold me his business. Then you'd be willing to do that for someone else? Kind of to pay him back for how he helped you? Oh, hell no. Mark said with a laugh. I'm holding on here until I get noticed by some big accounting firm. They buy me out and move their operations to some central office far away from here. That way I can retire and spend the rest of my day fishing and smoking pot. I'm sick of this work. Do you have any idea how boring accounting is? Johnny smiled, thinking of how he'd been able to study poker hands and winning hand percentages during his accounting classes. Yeah, I know how boring it is. Then listen to someone who's been doing this for 25 years. Get some other job. I'd rather shovel manure than do this crap. At least with shoveling manure, you get to work outside. And why do you want to join the Walmart family? The woman said. She was wearing a ratty t-shirt under a bright blue vest, blue stretch pants, and Johnny thought that they were getting close to the limit of their stretching ability. I just graduated from college, and I'm looking for a job until I can find something in my chosen career, he said, having left the blazer in the car. He was wearing a simple white shirt with a black tie and dress slacks, which made him the best-dressed person in the entire store. I see, the woman said, looking over the application he'd filled out at one of the customer service counters. She looked him over and said, I've seen kids like you before. come in here after you don't get your dream job and think you could just slum it here, slacking through the job as if it doesn't matter how well you do because it's just Walmart. Well, let me tell you, this is a job to be proud of. There are people who've worked here for years, and they feel damn happy to have a job as good as this one. Walmart is a fine company that treats its employees well, no matter what you overeducated pinheads think. I make enough to support myself and my cats, and there's money left over to invest in Walmart stock. I didn't, Johnny started defensively. She cut him off, her voice raising. I have three of you punks in here yesterday, and I could see the contempt in their eyes. That's right, I'm smart enough to know the word contempt. I'm also smart enough to know when you have to come in here from your high-dollar job interview and you're here to make fun of us, giving goofy answers about how you can't show up for a month but you have to be paid immediately, or how it's your job and you'd like to do it your way. I don't need that kind of abuse. Ma'am, I'm really just here to see if you have any jobs available, he said, sinking into his chair. I do, but only for decent, hard-working Americans who know how Walmart saved this country from the commies, the pinkos, and the faggots. That's right, I said faggots, you homo bastards are trying to destroy our company, and Walmart won't let you do it. You hear me? We won't let you do it. Now, good day, sir. What? Johnny said, utterly baffled. I said good day, the woman said with as much finality as she could put into her voice. She then took Johnny's application, tore it in half, and tossed it on her desk. I think I have a really good idea of where you are in your life, Mr. Finch, the obese younger man told him. Johnny looked out the manager's window and saw people wrapping tacos and putting them on gleaming metal trays under heat lamps. He could feel his stomach roll. He felt a small amount of bile back up in his throat as he fought to keep both his lunch and his pride down. The younger man, who looked as if he wasn't even old enough to need to shave more than twice a week, put down the one-page application, looked across the desk at him. It's not been a good day for you, has it? The man said. No, sir, it hasn't. But I figured I could work a job like this for the time being until I figure out what I'm going to do with my degree, Johnny said, trying to keep the desperation out of his voice. I see. I employ a lot of college students here at Taco Mouth, the man said, trying to sound philosophical. Mostly when college is in session, but I have a few people who stay through the summer. They're decent enough employees. I have a couple of questions for you, if that's okay. That would be great, Johnny said, not even remembering the last time that day someone had actually asked a question during one of his job interviews. The man nodded and smiled and pulled a sheet off a pad at his desk. He scribbled a few things on it and then asked, If a position opened up in the company's corporate office where you could use your skills and talents, would you be interested in it? Yes, I would. I would like to move up the company if that were at all possible, Johnny said. He figured even a place like Taco Mouth had need of some accounting services, and there were worse companies he could be doing the books for. I see, the man said, writing down a few notes. Where do you see yourself in 5 years? I see myself in some sort of managerial role, hopefully in either an accounting firm or an accounting department in a fine company such as Taco Mouth. Okay, the man said, putting his pen down. I think we're done here. I'll be up front with you, Mr. Finch, and let you know that Taco Mouth is not interested in hiring you at this time. Johnny was stunned. He stared at the man for almost a full minute incredulously. Finally he said, Excuse me? You aren't interested in hiring me to serve people tacos based on those two answers? I don't know how to say this without sounding like a jerk, but those were damn good answers to a couple of amazingly generic questions. I have no doubt those would be great answers in a business context, the man said, but they show me that you have ambition, drive, a goal. You want to do something with your life. Those are all things I'm not looking for in an employee. I am the one who wants to go places. I need to move up in this organization if I'm ever to afford a house or a car that's less than 10 years old. If I hire someone who's going to outshine me, has a fancy college degree, they might give you the promotion instead of me, and I can't allow that to happen. Okay, forget what I said. I'll keep my head down. I won't work hard. I'll screw up orders. I'm a natural slacker. I'll play poker at the front counter. I don't want your job, Johnny said, the desperation moving up from a hint. I can't trust that you could suppress your natural talents. I mean, you've already been willing to sell your self-respect to me for a minimum wage job. God knows what you'd do for a job that paid a living wage. I'm sorry. You're sure, Johnny whined? Yes, and thank you for thinking of Taco Mouth. Chapter 7. Johnny sat in the huge overstuffed chair in the living room, staring at the dormant TV and thinking dark, unspeakable thoughts filled with violent imagery and other things that would make the Federal Communications Commission attempt to ban him from thinking. He had a can of beer in his hand that he had spiked with the cheap whiskey James kept in the spice cabinet and was on his third mixture. It tasted nasty, but was doing its required job, getting him good and hammered. It was as he was finishing up the vial drink that Dawn came into the house. She was dressed in a simple green summer dress with her flowered Doc Martens and said, "I'm here, everybody put on pants." "I'm the only one home," Johnny said, "and I'm still wearing my interview pants. Although after today, I could have worn those ugly weightlifter pants from the 80s, and I don't think it would have made a bit of difference." As he tossed the empty beer can in the general direction of the garbage in the living room, Dawn winced and said, "I'm guessing things didn't go exactly as we thought they were going to." "You know I'm circumcised," Johnny said flatly. "Of course," Dawn said, a bit confused. "Then you know there was a day in my life, in the distant past, before I could form memories or words, but still, a day where someone took a knife and cut off a part of my penis. Keep that in mind when I say this was easily the worst day of my life." She cringed and sat down on his lap, sinking him even further into the chair. "Was it really that bad?" Johnny told her about the interviews he'd had, ending with how he wasn't even able to get a job wrapping food and paper at a fast food place. She ran her fingers through his thick brown hair and listened attentively, trying to keep the shock off her face. When he was done, she kissed him on the forehead and said, "Let's not worry about it tonight. You haven't talked to your professors at the university yet." "I think I'll wait a day or two to do that, since right now I have a feeling that they would recommend Taco Mouth, seeing as how the manager said that a job there is the first step toward ruling the world." "Okay, that's fine, as long as you're trying." He looked on the coffee table and saw it had been cleaned off, for the most part, and all that was left on it were a couple of magazines and the stuff he'd tossed on it from the chair, including his poker set. It sat there, shiny and gleaming in the fading sunlight that was filling the house. Again, it hit him that a little over a week ago he was dreaming of millions of dollars, and now he was someone unable to find a minimum wage position. Inside were cards, chips, and something he knew he was good at. Dawn noticed what he was looking at and said, "I never said anything about you not playing poker. You know that, right?" "Yeah," Johnny said, "I know. But let's face it. If I were to start saving again, it would be a few years before I could have enough money to be in a tournament that big again. Add to that, I'll be unemployed in about 2 months, and I think taking what little money I have left and using it on a poker stake is a poor choice." "Just remember that you are saying this and not me. So in 20 years, when you're going through your midlife crisis, you have to say that you made this choice, not me." "You think I should play?" "I'm not saying that either," Dawn said. "Then what are you saying?" Johnny said. "I'm staying out of this whole discussion," Dawn said. "If you're staying out of the discussion, just who am I talking to?" Johnny said. Dawn smiled and said, "I think you're voicing your inner conflict. That tends to happen when people drink. That or telling their friends that they love them and that everyone should all get a big house together." Johnny looked thoughtful. "I wondered how I woke up with three other guys in a single house. I just thought someone had made the decision for me." "Sadly, no," Dawn said. "You have to make your own decisions. It's one of the consequences of being over the age of 12. "Then I refuse to be more than 12 years old anymore. Bring me my Legos and Transformers," Johnny said. Dawn shrugged. 12-year-old boys don't have an interest in girls." "Neither do I," he said, caressing her breast. "Girls are icky, and I have it on good authority that they are crawling with cooties." 12-year-olds don't get to drink either," she said, giggling. "Damnation and hellfire! Why couldn't I have been born to Southerners so that I could drink at the ripe old age of 10? I should lodge a formal complaint with my parents. Do you have one of those forms for that?" "I don't have any there," she said, giggling again and moving his hand off her breast. Before anything else could happen, Rob burst through the door and both Dawn and Johnny jumped, startled by how fast he came in. "I have the best news ever," he yelled, not even looking around to see who was there. "You finally got more tips than James?" Johnny said, feeling the alcohol hit him pretty hard now. "No, I'll never win that one. He cheats. Or steals. One of the two. Or both. But that's not important now. I've found someone. I'm in love." "Again?" Dawn said, then immediately regretted it. Johnny gave her a light, playful smack on the back of the head and said, "Be nice." This is different, Rob said, even though he had said it was different every other time he had claimed he had found true love. She's wonderful. We just got done with the conversation that started last night. We just talked all night and into the morning, and then went to the coffee place and kept talking. I'm not even tired. Oh, and Val said to tell you, too, that she'll be at the party Sunday night. Party, Johnny said. Don looked at him and said, I told you about it last night. I'm having a resume party. That does not sound like something you would have told me while I was awake, Johnny said, because I don't even know how those two words have anything to do with each other. Don frowned. It's where I get a bunch of my friends together and we put together resumes and cover letters and send them to as many employers as we can find. You don't remember us talking about it last night? Honey, sweetheart, darling, love of my life, Johnny said. You called me at 2 a.m. and we talked until the sun started coming up. I barely remembered my own name when I got up this morning. And after all those horrid job interviews, Rob broke in. Excuse me, but I'm telling you about falling deeply, madly, and truly in love over here. You two can discuss your discussions when no one else is around. I have excitement to pass on to people, all right? All right, Don said, and sat down on the floor in front of Johnny, who didn't move at all from the position he was in. He looked as if the chair was slowly eating him, and Don leaned against his legs, absently playing with the hem of his dress pants. We're ready. Tell us all about her. Are you sure? Because I could get interrupted a few more times while you two plan the next few weeks' worth of dates. I'm sure, Johnny said, properly chastened. How about your wedding plans? Have them all firmed up? We're ready, Johnny said. How about meal planning? Do you two need to do that? Losing interest now, Dawn said in a sing-song voice. At least she didn't say bored now. The last time a redhead said that, she killed a guy, Johnny said. And a Buffy the Vampire Slayer reference. Score, Dawn said, high-fiving him. Cute, Rob said. He waited a bit and watched as Dawn and Johnny quit joking around and sat quietly. Johnny felt as if he were back in junior high again, and the teacher was just quietly waiting for the horrid little bastards to calm the hell down. Okay, Rob said, finally starting into his story. Her name is Wendy, and she and a bunch of people in her drama class came in last night because they finished their last practice for some summer stock thing. They ordered some pizza and way too much beer. I mean, it was enough beer for James, but for any other living human, it was way too much beer. Impressive. Most impressive, Dawn said in her best Darth Vader voice. I know. I didn't know actors could put it away, but they went through a lot of pitchers. It's a good thing that the bars here can't serve food. I made out like a bandit last night, Rob said. But the important thing is that she started talking to me. And we realized we'd been in a couple of classes together last year. One thing led to another, and... This isn't going to be some porn movie with you as a pizza delivery boy, is it? Johnny said. John responded quickly, and they were both singing, Bow chicka wow wow, like a cheesy porn movie. No, Rob said, it wasn't like that. We just talked. We have so much in common. She's a comic book geek, she plays role-playing games, she likes grunge music from the 90s, all that stuff. Okay, I have to ask, Don said. Since all you guys are repressing how much you want to be like Johnny, is she a redhead? No, Rob said. Before he could say any more, Don said, Thank God. I'm sick of you guys either dating redheads or convincing the girls you do date to dye their hair red. It's enough to make you think you're all stalking me. They are, hun, Johnny said. They just don't have the guts to actually stalk you. They just want to stalk your hair. It is the best hair on the planet, she said, smiling as Johnny ran his fingers through it. You two are insufferable, Rob said. And with one word, Rob has proven that the money he spent on an English minor was not wasted, Don said, laughing. Johnny saw that Rob was getting to the point where their teasing wasn't going to be funny any longer and said, So where do you two go from here? We were both pretty tired from staying up all night, so I came home to get some sleep. Then she's coming over later tonight. Hopefully James works tonight. He does, Johnny said. He said he's low on cash, so he's grabbing all the driving shifts he can get his hands on. I don't think he's had a day off in a couple of weeks. There was an uncomfortable silence in the room. All of them knew why James was low on money, but no one wanted to say it. Johnny thought the world of James, but there were times where he made incredibly boneheaded decisions, mostly connected to alcohol, drugs, or money, and more often than not, all three. I'm off to bed. If you two start doing anything loud, I'll be coming down with either a baseball bat or a rabid weasel, whichever's closer to my bed. Don't worry, Johnny said. We'll be having incredibly loud sex in the hallway, so if it wakes you up, you can just imagine it's one of your sick, twisted dreams. Rob went off to his bedroom and shut the door. Johnny could feel the alcohol hitting his system again, harder than he expected, and Dawn was still sitting on the floor. Something she'd said before Rob came in came back to him, and he said, "What is a resume party?" "Oh, yeah," she said, remembering what they'd been talking about before Rob showed up. "I've got a list of every employer who is looking for entry-level psych workers in a 5-state area, and we're going to print up copies of my resume and mail them to all of them. Val's going to whip us up a mail merge thing on her computer so that it grabs the names, addresses, and such, and puts them into my cover letters. Val is going to be there? Is it a good idea for me to show up?" "Of course," Dawn said. "She hates me," Johnny said. "No, she doesn't," Dawn said. Then she thought a bit and said, "Okay, she doesn't hate you more than she hates anyone else." "There's a ringing endorsement," Johnny said. He felt the urge to have another beer, but looking out the window, it was still light out, and he didn't like the idea of getting completely drunk while the sun was still shining. It made him feel like an alcoholic. Being as how he was a failed poker player and would soon be unemployed, becoming an alcoholic seemed like a poor but inevitable life choice, so he decided to delay it for now. "Val's a nice person once you get to know her. She's just been hurt so many times she works pretty hard to keep people away until she can trust them. She's also really scared people won't like her, so she tends to act first to keep them at a distance," Dawn said. "I see, Dr. Freud," Johnny said. "What do you think we should do about her problems?" "Stay out of them," she said with a smile. "I really think that she'll be happier once she finds a boyfriend who cares about her. She's so insecure that I think that when she finds someone who really cares about her, she won't feel like she needs to perform so much." "Or," Johnny said, "she might be so incredibly messed up that getting a boyfriend is about as likely as me being an announcer on the World Series of Poker next year." "Quiet, you," she said, half-joking, but with a little bit of anger in her voice. Luckily, Johnny caught on to it, even in his inebriated state, and said, "Sorry," quietly and defensively. "I hate it when you beat yourself up," she said, bringing her voice down so that he was the only one who could hear it. "I'm not beating myself up. I'm keeping abreast of my current station in life. It's bad enough that my nickname is now First-Hand Finch, but I can't even get a job putting pseudo-meat into tortillas. I think a solid acknowledgement of my station in life is called for." "You should get one of those lists, too," Dawn said, rubbing his calf and smiling, trying to change the subject. "You think so?" Johnny said. "They probably have a lot more jobs for accountants out there than in this armpit of a town. You'd get paid a lot more for an entry-level position than I will. For a youth counselor, you're lucky if you get paid more than the kids you supervise, and they're able to work at McDonald's." "Great, another group of people who get employed faster than I can," Johnny said, and was rewarded by a hard slap on his leg. "Fine," he yelped. "I'll go down to the campus tomorrow and get one. Where do they hand them out?" "You get them at the placement office, and you won't have to wait either. They have big stacks of them." "Because no one has a job?" "Exactly," she said. "Wait a minute," Johnny said, figuring out something she'd said previously. "What did you mean about the 5-state area? I thought we weren't going to move." Dawn bit her lip and looked down. Johnny stared at her and felt himself sobering up. He waited until she said, "I already looked for jobs around here. They've just destroyed the budget for youth care. I want to work with kids, but I can't stand the idea of being a school counselor. So I asked one of my professors where the jobs were. He said they were in Wisconsin, South Dakota, and Minnesota. So I got them on my desk." "But," Johnny said. He looked down at Dawn and then said, "Are you getting ready to leave me?" "No," she said firmly, "and don't get all abandonment issues on me. Our plan was that if you own the tournament or finished in the big money, we'd stay around here, because it would be cheap and the money would last longer. When that didn't happen, I had to start thinking about what we're going to be doing with our lives, and I want to pursue my career. There's nothing here." "Except everyone we know," Johnny said, trying to keep how upset he was out of his voice, and failing. "Miserably." She sighed and hugged his leg. "Hon, I haven't given up on finding a job here, but I can't keep wiping asses and cleaning up beds. You won't even have a job in a couple of months. We've got to figure out what we're going to do with our lives. Let's get the word out and see what jobs show up. Maybe there are ones here that we couldn't find." "I suppose," he said. "Do you want me to grab you another beer?" "Nah," he said, feeling the buzz of the ones he'd already had slowly fading away. "I think drinking another beer would have me standing out on the street pissing myself and ranting about the government." So, a bad idea. Jar Jar Binks bad, she said. You and your Star Wars, Johnny said, finally smiling. Maybe Rob didn't get a redhead, but he seems to be wanting a geek girl like you. Face it, you're their leader and role model. Oh, dear God, they're all doomed, Johnny said. And there we go, part 4 of All In. I want to thank you for listening as I'm going through this novel. I've really enjoyed it. It's very different from the novel that has come before, which was 5 years later, and the novel that's coming later, which is almost a traditional detective story without a traditional detective. That's a little hint letting you know what's coming next. We have a number of other podcasts going on. Of course, there's The Mothership, Crazy Comics and Stories, which myself, my friend Joe, and once in a while our friend Jen Wicked get on every Monday and talk comic books. We do reviews, we talk about what's going on in comics, we share histories of Joe owning shops, me working group homes, Jen as an artist. I also have Solitaire Rose Radio, my solo podcast, where I interview people, I talk about comic book history. I have just completed the biography of Jack Kirby. The final part came out, but I'm not done talking about Jack Kirby. Head on over to crazycomics.solitairerose.com to listen to what's coming next when I talk about Jack. I have also brought back the weekly news update, my weekly news parody, which I did for 10 years, let it fade away, and have now brought it back again in podcast form. It comes every Tuesday, usually toward the end of the day, and then there's Novelcast. I missed last week's deadline. I was sick. My voice was completely shot. As I tried to record, I sounded like Lucille Ball after she'd smoked 15 Pall Mall cigarettes and was demanding coffee at a crappy diner. So rather than record with a terrible voice, I just waited a week. What this means is, part 5 is coming next Thursday. So you're getting 2 doses of All In within a week. Don't expect it all the time. There's a lot of work that goes into Novelcast. It takes a lot more work than I thought. And in a future episode, I'll discuss how much work it is versus a podcast where I just sit and blather on and on and on and on. One of the things I've done to try to help this podcast is to add ads. Here they are. Believe it or not, kids, this silliness has actual real sponsors. Our first sponsor is Graze.com. Graze gives you healthy snacks sent to your house. You can have them delivered weekly, bi-weekly, monthly. And your first box is free if you use the code CORYS3R5B. Our second sponsor is Bombas. Bombas socks are some of the best socks in the world, and remember, for every pair you buy, they donate a pair to a homeless shelter or other worthy cause. Just go to bombas.gotocloud.org/SF30. That's right, those are our ads. Go check out our sponsors, and I want to thank you for listening. I want to thank you for spreading the word. I want to thank people for the feedback. If you want to give more feedback, please do at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com or over on my Facebook page, Corey.Strode, or at the Facebook fan page, which you should all become fans of, and that's Solitaire Rose Novelcast over on Facebook. Thanks again, and I'll be back next Thursday with part 5.